This week on Vaticano, as Pope Francis prepares to canonize Carlo Acutis, explore the extraordinary lives of several teenage saints. Join the Grand Chancellor of the Order of Malta as he examines the Order's dedicated efforts in Ukraine and the Holy Land, and learn about the remarkable story of Saint Dismas, the good thief crucified alongside Jesus. Vaticano starts now. In a world in need of forgiveness, the Missionaries of Mercy established by Pope Francis celebrated their jubilee by offering confessions in numerous languages during the 24 Hours for the Lord initiative at the Basilica of Sant'Andrea della Valle. The Missionaries of Mercy have been assigned a special role by the Holy Father to be instruments of forgiveness and hold a special authority to absolve sins that are reserved only to the Holy See.
Pope Francis has seen the importance of reconciliation to God and to us human beings. And he gave us this privilege, not only the privilege, it is the spiritual responsibility that we, the Missionaries of Mercy, we are about 1,200 Missionaries of Mercy all over the world.
Their mandate focuses on being good confessors as well as good preachers.
When we see them, you know, they cry, the tears simply roll from their hearts. There's a great joy. There's a peace after giving absolution. As a priest myself, it is my greater responsibility to evangelize the importance of reconciliation.
Confessions were accompanied by an hour of the exposition of the Blessed Sacrament, which was honored through a range of prayers and hymns.
So I believe confession and adoration is important for everyone to continue to find ways to connect with God. And once you're doing that, whether you know it's daily, weekly, it still gives you that opportunity to speak to God.
24 Hours for the Lord combines the sacrament of the Eucharist with the sacrament of reconciliation. Just being present in a moment like this can be a powerful experience.
I entered this time of adoration with sadness, but I was fortunate to be able to go to confession, to embrace the Lord again, and He restored my joy. Because I was created for this, and many times I realize that I am not being who I should be, because I am sad, because I am far from the Lord, because I sin. And seeing that the Lord looks upon me with mercy is such a great gift.
The Missionaries of Mercy remind us of God's compassion, and they continue to make a profound impact through their confessional outreach.
After the time of the prophets and after the coming of our Lord, God has never ceased to send new messengers of the gospel to spread his message throughout the world in new and more effective ways. One of these people was that woman who has inspired us so much with her word and action, and whose death anniversary in the Lord we remember on this celebration, Mother Angelica. The
best. In Rome, a special memorial mass honored Mother Angelica's life, legacy, and steadfast faith, celebrated by Father Martinez at the Church of Santo Spirito in Sassia near the Vatican. The service marked the 9th anniversary of her passing in 2016. EWTN Vatican Bureau staff, along with their families and friends, gathered to give thanks for the religious sister who founded EWTN in the U.S.
Through her action and her work, she has inspired many men and women to take part in this work of proclaiming the eternal word to the world with new and ever more effective means.
Father Diego asked the faithful gathered in Rome to remember Mother Angelica's motto when contemplating how to communicate the faith in society today. Unless you're willing to do the ridiculous, God will not do the miraculous.
And Jesus wants to work the miracle through us today. We are the continuators of this long list of messengers and heralds of the gospel. in which we appear in intimate union with Mother Angelica.
Towards the end of his homily, Father Diego prayed,
"For fidelity to our mission, because God never tires of calling us to conversion and to live according to His eternal word."
Welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Pope Francis has advanced the causes of five people on the path to sainthood. First of all, Blessed Peter Torot from Papua New Guinea, Blessed Ignatius Shukrala Maloyan from Turkey, and Blessed Maria Carmen from Venezuela will be proclaimed saints. The Pope also approved the beatification of Italian diocesan priest Carmelo de Palma and declared Brazilian priest José Antonio de Maria Ibiapina a venerable of the Church. Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, received Polish President Duda in a meeting in Rome. The talks took place ahead of the 20th anniversary of St. John Paul II's death and near the millennium of the coronation of Poland's first king, Bolesław Chrobry. According to the Vatican, the discussion covered also the ongoing war in Ukraine and broader concerns about European security and peace. Pope Francis encouraged the faithful to continue their Lenten journey as a time of healing and to grow their faith in Jesus Christ. In his message, the Holy Father said the Pharisees were scandalized by Jesus and would murmur behind his back because he welcomed sinners. Francis added that Jesus heals the wounds and helps to love each other as brothers and sisters. Pope Francis also has appointed Archbishop Giovanni Cesare Bagazzi as the new archivist and librarian of the Holy Roman Church. Bagazzi previously served as Secretary of the Dicastery for Culture and Education. The 50-year-old prelate holds a doctorate in theology from the Pontifical Gregorian University and has taught at numerous theological institutions across Italy. The Vatican has published the official calendar of the celebrations planned for Holy Week, but it has not clarified whether Pope Francis will preside. After the pontiff's release from the hospital, doctors have prescribed complete rest for at least 2 months. It's expected that Pope Francis will give the Urbi et Orbi blessing. Also, the canonization of Carlo Acutis on Divine Mercy Sunday after Easter is confirmed in the Vatican Planner, a celebration that usually requires the presence of the Pope. Thank you again for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
Stay tuned. In just a few moments, we'll be back with an exclusive feature spotlighting teenage saints.
Passion is also important in the life of a young person. A young life without passion is like plain pasta without salt.
By approving the canonization of Carlo Acutis, Pope Francis has endorsed a new role model for today's teenagers. On April the 27th, he'll be canonized during the Jubilee for Teenagers, a good moment to reflect on all those, like Carlo, who died at the age of 15, who achieved sainthood at a fairly young age.
Maria Goretti, on her deathbed, to the question of the confessor, of the priest who asked her if she was willing to forgive Alexander, Maria Goretti replied, "Heartfelt forgiveness, and I want him with me in paradise."
E lo voglio con me in paradiso.
Alessandro, her murderer, later converted in prison after he had had an apparition of Maria Goretti. After his release from prison, he moved to a Capuchin monastery, working in the garden as a tertiary for the remainder of his life. Tarsicius was a 12-year-old acolyte during one of the fierce Roman persecutions of the 3rd century, probably during that of Valerian. Each day, from a secret meeting place in the catacombs where Christians gathered for Mass, a deacon would be sent to the prisons to carry the Eucharist to those Christians condemned to die. At one point, there was no deacon to send, and so Saint Tarcisius was sent carrying the holy mysteries to those in prison. Somehow, he was also recognized as a Christian, and a gang of boys became a mob and turned upon Tarcisius with fury. He went down under the blows. And after, when Tarcisius was carried to the catacombs, he died on the way from the injuries they caused him. In 2010, Pope Benedict reminded altar servers that Tarcisius is their patron saint.
Dear altar servers, Saint Tarcisius' testimony and this beautiful tradition teach us the deep love and great veneration that we must have for the Eucharist. It is a precious good, a treasure of incomparable value.
In 2016, Pope Francis declared José Sánchez del Río a saint. José was a 14-year-old Mexican boy who, in 1928, during a civil war in Mexico, was captured and tortured. This conflict was between Catholic peasant militias and the government, which was anti-Catholic. Despite severe torture, José refused to abandon his Catholic faith. Tragically, after his captors mutilated the soles of his feet, he was made to walk to the location of his execution. His final words were a defiant cry of faith. "Long live Christ the King," he shouted, just before he was executed. An eager young priest in the making and a faithful student of John Bosco, Savio was known for his devotion to Mary and deep admiration for the Eucharist. When Savio was accepted by Saint Bosco to the oratory in Turin, he asked his teacher to, quote, help him become a saint. But Savio died of pulmonary tuberculosis at the age of 14. Today, he is the patron saint of choir singers. Pope Pius XI referred to him as a little, or rather, a great saint of the Spirit. In his message for the 62nd World Day of Prayer for Vocations in 2025, Pope Francis said that the lives of young saints like Saint Dominic Savio show that vocation is, quote, a path towards true happiness through friendship with the risen Lord. A popular Polish saint, Kostka was a novice in the Society of Jesus. Kostka escaped his college and walked from Vienna all the way to Rome to join the Jesuit order. Due to his unstable health conditions, Kostka was unable to finish his training and died right after having a vision of Mary surrounded by angels. He is the patron saint of youth, young students, and seminarians, and to this day is very popular in Poland. Saint Agnes was a young girl when she consecrated her virginity to God. Although stories of her martyrdom vary, tradition holds that the young girl was pursued by various men, whom she refused because of her promise to God, saying, "Jesus Christ is my only spouse." She was brought to the Roman governor and accused of being a Christian. The governor tried to change Agnes's mind and strip her of her purity, but the young girl was protected by an angel. Finally, she was condemned to death with her last words ringing, "He chose me first, and he shall have me." The famous Roman church of St. Agnes was later built over the site of her martyrdom.
Here we have a relic of St. Agnes, her skull that was brought over from the catacombs. She was buried in the catacombs on Via Nomentana, but this relic, as a remembrance of her martyrdom, was brought back to this church that was built over the place of her martyrdom.
Today, she is known as the patron saint of young girls in chastity. The example of these saints, as well as the canonization of Carlo Acutis, show that it is possible to live a holy life, even as a teenager, as Pope Francis reminds young people.
Dear teenagers, you don't have the same experience of adults, but you do have something that we adults have sometimes lost. You have a keen nose. Do not lose this, please. You have a keen nose for reality, and that is a great thing.
Noi siamo presenti.
We've been present from the very first day the war in Ukraine broke out.
Il mondo occidentale.
Over the last 3 years, the Western world has done everything it could, but it's clear that this chapter needs to be closed.
Chiude questo capitolo.
While world powers are still trying to decide how to end the current war on European soil, the church is helping on the ground. The Order of Malta has been dedicated to humanitarian aid for centuries. Its volunteers and knights have always been quick to respond, offering medical and diplomatic assistance, especially in places such as Ukraine and the Holy Land. We met with the Grand Chancellor of the Order of Malta to talk about these troubled regions.
Io sono stato moltissime volte in Terra Santa.
I have been to the Holy Land many times. You always have this feeling that something can happen suddenly. I'd say that if the world's politics can find solutions that are not only a bit more stable, but also respect the diversity of each place, I don't think it'll be easy to find a way out of the current situation.
Similar situation also in Ukraine, here in Europe. What are your impressions?
Esiste un principio.
There is a principle of Ukraine's territorial integrity, the principle of defending the attacked, which are both valid principles. And there's also a humanitarian principle of protecting those who are vulnerable and in distress. Over the last 3 years, the Western world has done everything it could. Now, it's not up to me, as in the Sovereign Order of Malta, to define what should be done to achieve peace. But it's clear that this chapter needs to be closed. As usual, the Sovereign Order of Malta has stayed out of this international geopolitical situation, but it has done what it needed to do. We've been present from the very first day the war in Ukraine broke out, and we're also helping all the countries surrounding Ukraine. Additionally, many countries far from Ukraine have shown solidarity by sending financial aid, material support, volunteers and more.
The order was officially founded in 1113. Is it still attractive for people today to join such a traditional order, such an order with a history?
I think that for the Order of Malta to remain attractive, it needs to do two very simple things. Well, not exactly simple, but two things. The first is to stay true to itself, meaning avoid chasing trends. It must continue to embody seriousness, neutrality, and religiosity, which are key elements that complete our profile. On the other hand, though, we live in the world, so to stay attractive, it's crucial to understand what the world wants today. And the world today demands that nothing be done unprofessionally. Even volunteer work, even humanitarian efforts, must be approached as professionally as possible. We organize a pilgrimage to Lourdes, and what's beautiful to see during that week is that the majority of the young people helping the sick are very young. It's not just about providing material help, feeding them, taking them to the grotto, undressing and dressing them when they're taken to the pools, putting them to bed, helping them wash and so on, but you also need to talk to them, give them hope, help them understand that there's something more waiting for them, thus changing their perception of life a little bit.
And it seems this is still attractive also for young people who are coming to prayer and helping others.
That happens here. And paradoxically, Lourdes is the place where I see the greatest number of young people so easily.
Thank you very much for sharing this broad history, this broad story also of the Order of Malta and all the things and the works that you're involved in. Thank you for being with us.
Grazie infinite a voi.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us. After a brief break, we'll dive into the story of Saint Dismas, the good thief crucified alongside Jesus.
Now one of the criminals hanging there reviled Jesus, saying, "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us." The other, however, rebuking him, said in reply, "Have you no fear of God? For you are subject to the same condemnation. And indeed we have been condemned justly, for the sentence we received corresponds to our crimes. But this man has done nothing criminal." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." He replied to him, "Amen, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise."
The good thief dies at the side of Jesus. In Catholic tradition, he's known as Saint Dismas. The church considers him a saint. Jesus himself promised him paradise immediately.
Dismas has always been like a key figure in the crucifixion, because he was promised by Jesus Christ that he would be the first one to come to paradise along with him. So, but that's the only thing we know about Dismas. We don't know anything else. And what it attracted me of that character, of Dismas, was what it is he saw. So he was crucified on the Calvary. So on his left was another crucified, another criminal like him. But what did he see on that criminal to recognize him as the Son of God? So that's what attracted my attention. So I decided, okay, let's try to get into the spirituality of that time, that moment, to see why did Dismas recognize the Messiah, the real Messiah.
Tony Gratacos is a best-selling author from Madrid, Spain. He came to Rome during Lent to participate in the Jubilee pilgrimage. With EWTN News, he met on the bridge leading to Castel Sant'Angelo, which is lined with stone angels carrying the instruments of torture. Looking at the tools used to torment Jesus, he shared his reasons to write a novel about the good thief.
So you wrote a whole book about a character in the Bible that we know very little about. Yes. How did you choose what to tell about him and what not?
So what I wanted to choose is like the main moments which would lead Dismas to the cross. So what came into him, that was first love, then bitterness, then thief and criminal, and then finally the cross. So that's the way which leads up to the Calvary. So I wanted to focus on those very moments.
And you also described these last moments of Jesus together with a good thief.
Uh-huh. That's correct, yeah. So going up the Calvary, no, and how he tries this mass to look at, and he has Jesus Christ in the back. He tries several moments to look at him, to see if he sees something in him which might recognize as a Messiah, but he cannot see him. So he cannot see him till the end, when the cross of Jesus Christ goes up, and then he sees Jesus Christ. He not only sees Jesus Christ, but he sees on his feet the Virgin Mary, Saint John, so the blessed women. So, and those are the things which start to move him towards recognition of the Messiah.
In Spain, you're a best-selling author, but not necessarily for Catholic literature. But with this book, it seems you want to bring Jesus closer to people through the eyes of the good thief.
Yeah, but I don't like people to say, oh, this is a Catholic book or a religious book. So I think this is a book. It talks about other books which I wrote. One is about the Mexican conqueror Hernán Cortés. This is about Dismas. So is it religious? Well, Dismas is kind of a very religious person, but this is not that religious, so this is a book for everyone. So it's an encounter with Jesus Christ, the person, Jesus Christ, the God.
What can we learn from Dismas today?
So what we can learn from Dismas is the leap of faith he took. So he had to take like a leap of faith to recognize the Christ in a criminal, so in someone crucified on the cross. So we, as Catholics, as Christians, as Catholic, we have to take the same, to do the same leap of faith. So in recognizing the Christ in a piece of bread, on the altar.